Hey, everybody, this is Jeff, host of In the Loop. Now, we're going to get to the main event here very soon, but just a quick preamble. Our show at the moment, the actual show, In the Loop, is on hiatus. But those of us holding down the fort here, we're trying to keep busy. And the other night, we invited our listeners to join us to talk about the election. Specifically, we wanted to focus on what's going on with younger voters. So what we have for the podcast today is a somewhat condensed version of that event. Now, a much shorter version of this aired on All Things Considered here in Minnesota, which is why you're going to hear me mention at one point during the show something about All Things Considered. Anyway, we do very much hope to return with a new full In the Loop shows later in the spring. If you're new to our podcast, maybe hearing me for the first time, I hope you'll dig back a bit, check out some of our shows from this past fall. We built them to last. And if this particular podcast today puts you in a political mood, maybe go for the one about flip-flopping. So, this election forum that I am about to play started off without a whole lot of fanfare, just like this. I am here in the UBS Forum in St. Paul with a pretty full house of people who braved some frigid weather to be here with us this evening. And this group is going to particularly help us dig into what's going on in the minds of younger voters as primary season heats up. And I don't just mean college kids here. Statisticians like to think of younger voters as anybody under 30, and it looks like those folks could play a very big role in this election. Now, let's set the scene a little bit. Up to this point, we've been moseying along with, you know, a caucus here, a primary there. But on Tuesday, people, all that is going to change. If you've been listening to the news at all, you know the drumbeat has begun.
It's coming. Get ready. Super Tuesday. Caucus. Primary madness. 24/7. One day only. Super Tuesday.
More delegates up for grabs than ever before. Hot air spinning wheel.
Flying mud.
And the ultimate showdown.
Change versus experience.
Tuesday.
Clinton.
Obama.
Special appearance by Grave Digger.
Tuesday.
Kids caucus for just $5.
Right. Super Tuesday, of course. You know, a bunch of states, Minnesota, California, New York among them, moved up their primary and caucus dates this year, and we have kind of the closest thing we've ever had to a national primary. Now, it's not a certainty, but Super Tuesday could very well decide our candidates for November. Pundits have been stretching for new names for it. Super Duper Tuesday? Tsunami Tuesday? The Tuesday of Destiny. I did not make that up, the Tuesday of Destiny. And as Super Tuesday approaches, candidates are courting that youth vote. You can, for example, download a Barack Obama ringtone.
Go, 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 Obama, Obama, oh! Go, go.
And we did. Hillary Clinton's campaign put out a video of young people talking about how much they like Chelsea, as a matter of fact. Mitt Romney, for example, let a little bit of his streetwise side show through last week when he was posing with a bunch of kids in Florida.
Who let the dogs out?
Who? Yeah, he goes on to grab a little baby, also true, compliment its bling bling. And of course, you can't be a candidate of the future without a profile on MySpace and Facebook. John McCain even has his own social networking site called McCain Space. Now, all these candidates have good reason to reach out to younger voters. Look at Iowa. 20% of caucus goers were under 30. New Hampshire, 16%. These numbers are up considerably over the last two presidential elections. Now, the impact on the Republican race isn't quite so clear-cut. For the Democrats, the young vote has a lot to do with why Barack Obama has some crucial momentum heading into Super Tuesday. Now, before we get into it with our thoughtful, well-informed audience here at NPR, a little perspective from the outside world. On a recent Friday night, my producer, Sandin Totten, and I headed out to where the young people are. We hit the streets with a microphone and, in this case, a video camera. Let's play that. Hello, I'm Jeff Horowitz. And, you know, if you believe the news, people are very excited about this election. You hear all kinds of people, especially young people, who are just super psyched for Super Tuesday, which is right around the corner now. So, In the Loop is out here in Minneapolis tonight. We're going to see if we can tap into some of that crazy excitement. Everybody gather around for a simple question. How excited is everybody about Super Tuesday?
I don't even know what Super Tuesday is.
Super Tuesday?
No idea what it is.
Super Tuesday?
So super.
I have no idea.
Going once, going twice?
I don't know what is Super Tuesday.
You haven't heard about Super Tuesday?
Never heard in my life. I've been in America for 10 years. I've never heard. I don't know what is.
Super Tuesday, are you ready? It's coming. It's creeping up on you, sort of like me.
Sure, I can't wait.
Are you ready for Super Tuesday?
Yes, I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are you ready for?
To have fun.
Have fun. What are you going to do when Super Tuesday rolls around?
Go to parties and clubs.
How super is it going to be?
I don't know. God knows. It's going to be crazy.
I'm freaking pumped, man. I can feel it coursing through my veins right now. It's ridiculous.
What's it doing to you?
It's making my toes tingle. Super Tuesday is the best day of the year.
What are you doing to get ready? Pump yourself up.
A lot of dancing.
No kidding?
Yeah. In front of my mirror. Got to practice up.
When I say Super Tuesday, what are you expecting?
You know, cotton sheets on sale and stuff like that. Yeah. White sheets.
Sounds like Taco Tuesday.
It sounds like what?
Taco Tuesday.
Some of us used to go up for this thing that we used to call Booze the Night. Tuesday night, you know?
Makes me think of Fat Tuesday or like Mardi Gras or something.
Mardi Gras.
Like something with basketball?
Sounds right.
Or maybe curling, perhaps.
Here in Minnesota? That would explain why you've never heard of it.
Right?
It's a big day for curling tournaments.
Is it?
Super Tuesday is February 5th. It's a big election day.
Okay.
When there are lots and lots of primaries. Is it Fat Tuesday?
It really is Fat Tuesday. Easter's early this year, so it's Fat Tuesday.
I hadn't thought about it. Fat Tuesday and Super Tuesday are the same.
Wow.
They're not calling it Super Fat Tuesday, but they should.
Now they will.
So there you have it. The extraordinary brand awareness of Super Fat Tuesday. Look for all these friendly faces at a caucus near you.
Have an awesome Super Fat Tuesday!
If you want to see our lovely tribute to the American electorate in video form, we've got it for you at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop, along with lots more videos from some of our recent shows. Now, I think our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio right now is a little more on top of things, so let's get to it. Younger voters are surely going to shape things on the Republican side, but let's get into this question first with the Democrats. This is easily the banner headline so far, I think, when it comes to young voters. Barack Obama, right? 57% of the under 30 vote in the Iowa caucuses, 51% in New Hampshire, 59% in Nevada, 67% in South Carolina. So clearly, the guy's, he's a hit with the kids. What's the appeal here?
My name is Andy Zimney. I'm from St. Paul. I think Ted Kennedy put it great yesterday in calling him really the next generation. It feels like a new generation after a long 8 years or 16 years of the baby boomers. I think he resonates with folks who, it feels like a changing of the guard. And
well, he's 46, so what makes him feel like the next generation to you?
I think it is, it's that message of hope, of optimism, of what has felt, especially for the last 8 years, of a lot of politics of fear, a real shift to that politics of hope that makes people feel like there's something to be excited about rather than afraid of.
Let's keep going. Got a hand up right down here.
I'm Nancy Taff, and I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota. Very superficially, Obama looks young, especially compared with McCain. So that is a lot of the appeal.
Is he your choice at this point?
Yes, but I'm still kind of undecided.
Yeah. What is it that leaves you undecided about him?
I really like Hillary because she reminds me of my mother. She's a very strong person, and I'm not informed enough on their exact platforms because they kind of keep changing. So it kind of is going to be a mad dash of research before I caucus.
Barack looks young, feels young to you. Hillary reminds you of your mother.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing, but that's also maybe the challenge for her in a nutshell with those younger voters. Do we have a hand up right here? Let's keep going on, Barack. Yeah, right down here.
I'm Sarah Hughes, and I'm from Minneapolis. And I can't say that I'm going to vote for him, but I think that he definitely has made a point to stand out as different. And he's appealing to the younger people because of that, and he's saying that he's different from everybody who has been in politics heavily for a long time. So I think that young people think that that's their voice as opposed to what already exists.
To have someone declare that they're different, but that doesn't do it for you. You said you're not convinced, right?
Right.
Why not?
change is important, change we need, but I think that there's more issues that I care about than that.
You think people are hoodwinked by just change being thrown about? And
I think a little bit, yeah.
Does that bother you?
Yeah. The young voters have been very susceptible to the glitz and glam going on around Obama.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. I saw your hand go up a moment ago. Sure.
Alisa Weber of St. Paul, Minnesota. I think the appeal of when she was talking about the glitz and glam earlier, I think that's right. I think that it's the appeal that Oprah likes him, and now we've got the Kennedys involved. And for me, I've been on the fence about him for a long time. And when I saw his response to the State of the Union, I saw that his answer was not a canned answer, such as I felt from Hillary. I felt like his was a genuine answer. And I think he just seems real humble and genuine.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that has a special appeal for somebody who's, you know, a younger voter, hasn't been immersed in thinking about politics for years?
Yeah, I think we're sick of the, you know, I think the younger people are sick of the canned answers it seems like he says something different every time, and I don't mean he changes his mind about things, but he seems to really have genuine answers to things. I've seen him interviewed on a number of different programs, and he just doesn't have the canned answers, the fake smile, he's not you know, slinging mud. I think that that's a very appealing to younger voters. I think they're sick of all of that.
Well, let me ask specifically about these younger voters on the other side of that equation. Do they see through it, or are they sensitive to it in a way that baby boomers or other voters might not be? Do you want to take that one on? Or?
Well, sorry.
You probably had something else for me. But
it was sort of a different thought along the same line. My name is Laura Dobbs, and I'm from Woodbury. And what I think when I hear Obama speak, and the first time was at the Democratic Convention, and he is an amazing, compelling public speaker. And everything sounds off the cuff, everything sounds natural, but I'm uneasy because I don't actually feel like I know where he stands. You hear him speak, and it feels real. But then when I try and look for things or find things more tangible, I don't know where they are. I don't know where he stands, and that makes me uneasy.
Is it the glitz and glam? You're thinking that
yes.
Somebody mentioned earlier.
Yep. But it's hard because he is so compelling and you want change. But besides change, I really don't feel like I know what else there is.
Well, we hear a lot about this new generation, specifically when it comes to advertising, being very sensitive to being sold to. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're seeing some of the same things in politics, you think?
That's part of what politics is they are selling themselves. But it makes me uneasy because I don't really feel like I know what's behind it.
Whether the genuineness is genuine.
Yes. Or I don't know what to expect from him, save a message of change, but I don't know what comes with that.
Thank you. Let's jump right over here. You've had your hand up for a little while.
Hi, Joe from Hopkins. One instance when Obama, the first time that I saw him was on a television program, and I might even be making this up, but I think that he admitted to using cocaine. And then He later went on to say with his wife that, you know, she wants him to quit smoking and all. He maybe wasn't there yet. And that to me just said, okay, this is genuine. This is different. I'm tired of, you know, that depends on what the definition of the word is, you know, that sort of politics that has been going on. And so that's a specific example where he appeared to be different. And then he's gone on to kind of broadcast that feeling of change loud and clear, and everyone's hopped on to that. But that's one place where I saw it shine through as genuine.
Somebody who's willing, even very early on, to put themselves
out
there
on the table. Yep.
Obama, of course, is the child of a black father, white mother, and this is something that's new, at least for somebody to have reached this stage of momentum and potential in a presidential race. Let me call upon a little bit of tape here. We'll do this from time to time as we go on tonight. I want to move on to that topic for a moment here. Let's hear from Andre Cohen, who lives in Minneapolis.
I like the fact that Obama has not, at this point, played the race card. I think it's a good thing because the issues that we're dealing with today aren't as simple as black and white. It's not African-Americans versus white folks. I think the conversations just about race are so stifling and so divisive. We seem to have the same conversations over and over and over again. And I'm proud that he hasn't had to use those conversations.
It was Andre Cohen. And I'm wondering if you think race plays differently to the generations. Maybe to take a moment to think about this. Oh, sure. You have a hand up right away. Your name, I'm sorry?
I'm Phyllis from St. Paul. And I think that race is, well, it's less of a factor these days than it used to be. People are more ready and more accepting of whoever a person is. And I like that. I like seeing that.
Thank you.
John Paul from Woodbury, and I would say that with Obama, there's a very clear visual representation of difference. I mean, he doesn't look like any of the presidents we've had before, the same way that Hillary doesn't, except Hillary has a name that we've heard before. So I would say the most different in look and name is Barack Obama.
But as we heard from Andre there, he doesn't play to it. He doesn't try to use that.
No, but I think a young person just giving a cursory glance at the candidates is going to pick up on that quite fast without having to listen to any of the candidates.
Well, why is it not necessary anymore? Sure, let's go right down here.
My name is Catherine from St. Paul. I think it's wiser that he doesn't play to the race card. He's right. It's very obvious just looking at him. There's no reason to make it an issue, and it becomes more divisive if you make it an issue. Then it becomes an issue of, are you voting for me because I'm black, and am I black, and all of this stuff that we've heard. That takes away from him being perceived as a candidate for a lot of different sorts of people, and it marginalizes him. I think it's a lot safer for him, it's a lot smarter for him to simply let it be. You know, you can decide what you think about my race, I'm going to talk about the issues.
Let's grab one more here before we move on.
Oh, John from St. Paul. I'm not sure it's in his personality. I mean, when you go back and look at his biography, he's a community organizer in the South Side of Chicago. And when you read his writing, and I recommend it, he's an extraordinarily gifted writer, is his discussions about building community. And he became building community not in one small piece of community, black or white or Hispanic, but organizing across that. So race may pop into it simply because it's an easy code word right now because we don't have good words for talking about a transracial change movement. We're so used to change being sort of, hi, blacks are changing, Hispanics are changing, Asians are changing, whites are in reaction. What he's saying is, I think, larger than that. I've been around politics for a lot of years, and I'm working for Barack's campaign. And the reason I'm working for Barack's campaign is I have that hope, but I'm also old enough and cynical enough to wonder if we can do it. Enough cynics in my generation say it can't be done. I think his appeal is that sense of, we know we're in a mess, maybe hope and belief will give us a vision to get out of it.
Now, I want to move on a minute, but I saw... Andre had his hand over here. Let's get to him. He's with us tonight.
Andre Cohen from Minneapolis. When we talk about this issue of race, I have to say that this week my heart was broken by Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton made the offhand comment that Barack's victory was that of Jesse Jackson, it said that black people in particular aren't sophisticated enough, aren't bright enough to select a candidate because of the character of that candidate. It really tainted my whole view of the Clinton machine.
Is that an old way, you think, of thinking about politics and
when we
racial
talk
lines?
Yeah, when we talk about this change stuff, you know, we have to see it in our actions. And I was very disappointed that they went to those old tricks as opposed to taking the high road.
Andre, thanks. I'm glad you're with us tonight. Let's, not to turn this into a Hillary bashing session, let's talk about a woman president. Somebody wrote in to us as we were preparing for this show and said they'd been interested to hear all the people who were declaring that they weren't feminists. They're not feminists, but they are really, really committed to having a woman become president. Yeah.
I'm Moira Mannion from Minneapolis. I am a feminist. I'm an old school feminist. And it's because of that reason that I want absolutely nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. Because of the role model that she's chosen to be. I may be the only person left that seems to remember Bill Clinton getting self-righteously behind the podium and wagging his self-righteous finger and saying, "I did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky." I would have had respect for her if she had stood up after these revelations, after he admitted to the world that he'd lied and cheated not only to her but to us, and said, I will not tolerate being humiliated or having my daughter humiliated. I am filing for divorce.
I saw a few people straining at that.
Anna Borowski from Minneapolis.
Yeah, it's really hard to blame a woman for the actions of her husband, and this is her own personal life. I understand, you know, the whole idea of maybe, you know, she should have stood up or something, but it's her personal life. She has her own reasons.
Do you think the way someone might perceive Hillary is different? You both, you know, look fairly young to me, right?
Yes. Yeah, I just, I really think it's really hard to be a powerful woman. Like, how do you portray that without being, you know, too hard or too soft? Like, she cries one week and that's bad, but she doesn't smile enough or laugh enough another week, and that's bad too. So I think, like, while Obama's trying to, you know, the role of, like, a minority candidate, also the role of a female candidate, both roles are very hard to play, I think.
Well, I don't want to get into the specifics of this debate, but what I do want to hear a little bit more about is why maybe this looks different to a younger woman.
I just believe that government is its own being. I've been brought up that way. I don't think that you just don't bring in things like that.
Or in this case, personal life.
Personal relationship, any of that business. It's where you stand with your politics and what you can get done in office that matters, as far as I'm concerned.
Very interesting. Now, that's a nice way to kick into a short story that we have for you here. This comes from Curtis Gilbert. Curtis is a reporter that we know. We asked him to think about some of what he'd been noticing covering the elections when it came to young people and how their thinking has changed.
Now age 60, Jan Simmons has voted a basically straight Democratic ticket going back to 1980. But she's known for quite a while that her 24-year-old son, Ted, doesn't share her politics.
When he was about 5, Ted asked his babysitter who she was supporting for president, and she was somewhat stunned. Well, he was supporting President Bush, or candidate Bush at the time. That was the first of his Republican inclinings.
Ted Simmons calls himself an extreme moderate. He's leaning towards the Democrats for president this year. He voted for John Kerry in 2004, but he's also cast votes for Minnesota Republicans like Senator Norm Coleman and Governor Tim Pawlenty. More than anything, Ted prides himself on his independent streak.
It's difficult for me to be on the extreme right or extreme left. I like to take both parts of their arguments and try to make something of it rather than keep butting heads.
Ted is part of a generation demographers have dubbed the millennials, people born after 1980. As with any generation, the millennials exhibit every imaginable political persuasion. They're not all Ted Simmons-style ticket splitters. But there are things about Ted's approach to politics that researchers have found are typical of Americans his age. A belief in pragmatism, a general sense of optimism, and a trust of large institutions from the federal government to corporate America. Those characteristics also set the millennials apart from their predecessors, the more cynical Generation X. Stephen Scheer has witnessed the generational shift from the political science department at Carleton College in Northfield. When Scheer first showed up on campus in 1981, 60s-style protesting was still very much in vogue there.
Politics tended to be liberal and points left of liberal.
And Scheer remembers students had an all-or-nothing approach to their activism in those days. Now, he says, things are different.
Students don't protest much anymore, and I think it's probably because they're much more pragmatic. They're looking at results rather than presenting their positions in a dramatic fashion.
That's not to say Carleton has turned conservative. Scheer says when it comes to the presidential race, the student body has made up its mind.
It's all Obama all the time on my campus, and I think that's true on most college campuses.
A quick visit to the dining hall confirmed that assessment.
I think Barack Obama is who I'm going to vote for.
I'm thinking I'm probably going to vote Barack.
I'm supporting Obama.
From Iowa to South Carolina, Obama has been the clear choice of the under 30 set. And that might not seem terribly surprising, except this is Carleton, the place where this guy taught for more than 20 years.
If from time to time, in order to change the system and have reform, I have to take on the tobacco companies or oil companies, so be it! So be it!
The late Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone was a populist, an old-school liberal who spoke out against big corporations and stood up for the little guy. Stephen Scheer admits Obama isn't the presidential candidate you'd equate with Wellstone.
I would say that Paul Wellstone is more like John Edwards, and Paul's approach was a populist class-based approach, but I really don't find that resonating terribly much with my students here. Politics to them, I think, is more about social and environmental change rather than traditional class issues.
John Edwards dropped out of the presidential race Wednesday after failing to garner enough support with his anti-corporate message. Sophomore Theodore Wolf is one of those Carleton students who hasn't been inspired by Edwards' populism.
I think it's kind of bullshit. Can you say that on the radio?
No, you can't. Can you think of another way of saying that? It took Wolf the better part of a minute to figure out how to rephrase his response. But the point is, even here, at the heart of Wellstone Country, the millennials seem to be looking for a new kind of politics. They don't want to bring down the man. They want to work with him. Jan Simmons notes young people aren't marching in the streets like they did during Vietnam, but she sees it as a sign of progress.
There is maybe a better thing, which is if Ted and his friends are talking about politics and then they go and they vote, they're living what they believe, and that's a better thing, I think.
Some reporting there from Curtis Gilbert. Let me just say, I'm Jeff Horwich, the host of In the Loop, and you're listening to a special election conversation as part of All Things Considered here on Minnesota Public Radio. So there's a lot that we could follow up on in Curtis's piece there, but the main thing that sticks with me is this notion of younger people getting more pragmatic, less idealistic, less focused on class issues. As someone said before we kicked to the story, you know, more focused on results as opposed to, in this case, you know, personal life. You know, and I think that goes hand in hand with the pragmatism. Let me ask somebody who's maybe not in this. Younger voter set, do you feel like our young voters, our young people, are missing something? Are they losing their way? Yeah, let's go right here.
Gary Peterson from Minneapolis, and I don't think any of them are losing their way at all. I think all people, is on the whole, are optimistic, idealistic, and want something to believe in. And the fact that we've got the choice of the candidates that we have on the Democratic side this year is just by itself an immense thing of hope. And
so you think the pragmatism can... doesn't mean there's not passion connected to it.
Oh, there's passion. There's passion. There's pragmatism and there's passion, but I would defy anybody to say that young people do not have idealism. I think it's there in spades.
Can we get one more take on that, anybody? Yeah, let's jump right back here.
I'm Eric from St. Louis Park, and my comments were, when I initially looked at the Democratic field, I was thinking Hillary Clinton, because I looked at her experience, and I felt like she's been in the field for a long time, and I think Edwards and Obama and Clinton are all very, very bright, but it takes more than brightness and charism to do the job. I think being the executive of this country is an incredibly complex job and very difficult. I thought she could do it best.
You said when you first looked at her, you still feel
but,
that way?
But okay. Then I went looked at Select a Candidate at Minnesota Public Radio.
Good.
Yeah, believe
Good
it or
plug.
Not.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And I did that actually yesterday. And as I went through it, I was thinking, you know, I'd probably still end up a Clinton supporter. But it came out that in terms of issue by issue, it was Barack, then Edwards, then Clinton for myself. And that really got me to kind of rethink it, and then some of the comments tonight also helped me to rethink it. I do like the charismatic nature and the hope that Obama brings to the table, but in the back of my mind, I'm still concerned about somebody being the best executive day-to-day with a complex job. So that's where I sit now.
Thanks very much. So when you looked at the issues, you saw where candidates really stood, and it made you think twice. That calls to mind another person that I want to hear from here. This is a listener of ours who's in Chicago, as a matter of fact, so I talked to her on the phone. This is Tracy O'Dowd, who's a graduate student there, and she is 23 years old.
The two candidates that stand out to me at this time are Barack Obama and John McCain. I think both of them are maybe a little more center on the political spectrum. Both of them seem more willing to go with their own beliefs rather than, you know, what everyone else is telling them they should do or the polls. I think in this election, at least for me, I've been noticing sort of the personalities of the candidates a lot more, and sort of who would I like to see running this country, and who would do a good job at least at bringing people together, at representing the office, and at representing our country. And I think both of these men, you know, would do a good job at that.
Now, the reason that came to mind is if you look at these guys on the issues, and select a candidate, for example, McCain and Obama are not going to come out very, very close together. They'll be close on a couple issues, but these guys are in very different places on some significant national issues. And yet, this was something that we heard from not just Tracy, but a number of people, this Obama-McCain appeal. What is it about these two? Yeah, let's jump right back there.
I'm Michelle from St. Paul. I think they both have an independence that the other candidates don't seem to have. While a lot of their platforms follow party lines, McCain has a history of defying his party. There's a lot of people who think he may be a Democrat if he wasn't from Arizona. But, you know, the whole response McCain had to the Patriot Act, to the beginning of the war in Iraq, he did not follow the party. And Obama has the same sentiment about him, this idea that I'm a man who makes up my own mind, I'm a man who goes my own way, and I think that the younger set, we like that.
Well, McCain, interestingly, you know, he wants the Bush tax cuts to continue. He wants to, he's probably the most hawkish, it's fair to say, of the candidates on Iraq right now. Mm-hmm. So he's pretty close to the party line on some pretty big issues there. Why do you say he feels somehow different?
He was one of the two who, he signed the bill with Feingold to
campaign finance reform.
For campaign finance, right? Reform, for other kinds of issues like that.
Immigration was another big one.
He feels a little bit different. There are some big parts that he has strayed from. And I mean, I think he may not be winning a lot of, you know, pluses in this campaign because he's starting to go back to towing that line and he's starting to move back in that direction. But in his history, in his past, there's a lot of that independence, a lot of that, you know, and I'm my man and you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm going to go make headlines myself.
So it's not strictly about, for you, if I might infer, you know, the preponderance of the issues and where he stands, but a pattern of being willing to deviate from that in big ways?
A pattern of being willing to say, I'm a person who looks at the information I've been given and creates my view of the world the way that I think it should be represented. And that's different. That's new. That's not something we've seen in a long time. And I think that that's something that they have in common.
Thanks, Michelle. Let's hear a bit of tape from the Sievertsons. This is Chad and Angela, 26 and 28 years old, respectively. They live in Blaine. Both of them, members of the Minnesota Young Republicans. They can help us think about how young people's view of the world may be shifting in ways that we don't always think about.
I think this is a totally new generation, the 9/11 generation. Everyone who was in the 17 to maybe 25 age range when it happened, because you're at that age where you're politically active and just becoming aware of what the whole world is, and when this happens, it shatters your whole image and it really does change your involvement. It changes your perspective.
Our biggest issue right now, besides the economy, is how do we handle this situation in Iraq and how do we deal with Afghanistan and all the other terrorists? I have two little brothers, and I remember thinking it's never going to be the same for them.
The Sievertsons from Blaine. Are they here? Are they with us? Your sense of being part of the 9/11 generation, Chad, where does that lead you in terms of your view of the candidates and the campaign?
It definitely leads me to sway toward McCain. In one sense, I don't know that this is completely to the point, but I do want to say that I find a lot of strength in him when it comes to terrorism, because we're that generation. We saw that happen. We thought it was a movie. I woke up at 9, I looked on TV, and I thought, this is a movie.
How old were you at the time?
I was 22.
Okay.
Looking at the movies, I thought, oh, this must be the sequel to Die Hard or something. You know, wow, great effects. No, this is real. And the fact that McCain advised the president to continue and to do, well, not to continue, but to do a troop surge to really seal up Iraq and get that under control means that he's a leader, a person who's going to push for that, and he's at that experience level. He's been in Vietnam. He knows what that's like. And
yeah, Angela, let me ask you, are you still undecided?
No, I am a McCain supporter.
Okay.
I'm concerned that the person who leads our country next can protect our interests, foreign affairs, and making sure that our borders are safe and that this doesn't happen again. I'd rather be on the offensive than the defense.
Is there anything to the generational question on the Republican side? Obama's, as we found, obviously, this just explosion of sentiment from people when you bring up his name, but is it McCain, or what's going on?
I hear a lot of Mitt Romney versus McCain and a lot of first, second there, but I guess maybe Dan knows a little bit more on that.
Sure. Dan, you're chairman of the Young Republicans of Minnesota. Where are you from?
I'm Dan. I'm from Arden Hills. What I'm noticing in our groups is there is no generational real observation. No trend you can see in the generations. You see Ron Paul supporters. You see Giuliani, McCain, Huckabee, Romney. Frankly, it's all over the map as far as I can tell with people of in the 20s crowd. I think the reason for that really is more that comes down to them for is issues. They're not so much driven by charisma or what they see as someone who is a younger type of candidate, but where people stand on the issues. And they're all over the map, just like any other voter is.
So when you look, figuratively across the aisle, you see what's happening on the Democratic side. Is there sort of, is it the glitz and glam somebody was talking about before? Are people blinded by that, younger folks, that that's not happening on the Republican side?
I think so. I think that you've got almost a cult of the personality, really, on the Democrat side, which is why I think you see Obama becoming so popular with the younger crowd, and you don't really see that so much with the Republican voters. Now, part of that could be that you don't have the personality on the Republican side that you do have on the Democrat side, where Obama does have, he's very charismatic, and you don't have any candidate on the Republican side who is as charismatic as Obama is.
How about Ron Paul? I mean, granted, his numbers at this point aren't putting him probably in a position to contend, but he's given great credit to young people for even being on the map.
Well, Ron Paul, I think that you probably do have a bit of a trend among younger people to become somewhat more libertarian, which is what he is. He used to run under the libertarian ticket. And so you've got a character there who is probably tapping in a little bit more into it just because there is a bit of a trend among young people to become more libertarian as far as almost anti-government in certain areas, but not necessarily in other areas. But I don't necessarily see a real trend toward Ron Paul that you see with Obama on the Democrat side.
Not the same magnitude. Of course, he's, interestingly, he's broken with the Republicans he's running against on one very big issue, which is that he's saying we need to get out of Iraq. Maybe some of that same effect, somebody who's willing to be a maverick, perhaps. Did you want to jump in there again, Angela?
I just want to say that Ron Paul, as a libertarian, he doesn't share all the same views as a Republican, and I think it's easy for the Republican party to notice that he's not the same. The only exception is that as a libertarian, they're not anti-government, and that's where I disagree with Dan there. They believe that you keep the government at bay, that you let capitalism take control, and that you keep... what's surprising about him is that he is pro-life, and most libertarians would be pro-choice because they would keep the government off the woman's body. I think that what you have with Ron Paul is the same thing you have with Ventura. He's appealing to a bunch of young people because they want something different, and they don't necessarily know what they're getting.
But he is certainly different, if nothing
he's
else.
He's extremely different.
I mean,
it's amazing that he's getting any support in the Republican Party. I think that he went on the Republican ticket because he knew he would never get this far if he was running as a libertarian.
In the Republican race and in Republican debates, you sense that religion is a big issue. There are questions about people's faith in the debates, questions about favorite Bible passages and so forth. As we think about this younger cohort of voters, is religion as important as it is in the overall electorate?
Emily from St. Paul. And I don't think religion should be something that they should judge on, because I like Mitt Romney and he is Mormon, and so people are using that against him, and I don't think that's really fair to him because his religion should not play a role in what he's doing. I'm Catholic, and I support him because I like his policies. So I'm more about looking at the policies and not like his religion.
There have been a lot of newspaper articles written about whether, you know, his Mormonism will affect him in the race. Mm-hmm. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 18.
Yeah, thanks very much. All right, let's go. Let's see if we can get one more on this question of, you know, religion in public life. Anybody from that set of younger voters who, do you think about religion? Does it matter to you? Sure, let's jump right back over here.
I'm Nancy from St. Paul. I've gone back and forth on the religion thing. At first, I was kind of like, why is that important at all? But then I've kind of gotten to the point where I've realized that people see religion as a way your values are shaped, and the way your values are shaped and what your values are shape the way you respond to policy, especially on social issues such as pro-life or pro-choice, but also on going to war or not. All those things really do tie back to your values, and a lot of people's values are based in religion. I'm not saying that, you know, you should be one religion or another or anything like that. I think that's where people see the religious aspect. But as far as young people, I think it's very polarized right now because we have, our parents' generation was raised going to church, and then we were kind of raised not going to church in response to the fact that they all went to church. But then there's this new movement where all of these youth are really responding intensely to religion. So it really, I think, depends on where you are. It's a really polarizing subject for young voters, I think.
Well, it's hard to speak categorically about it, but thanks for sort of laying out the landscape. I think it's a very interesting trend. And I did see your hand shoot up very quickly there. Did you want to jump in on this before we move on? Sure.
I'm Stephanie. I'm from Minneapolis. Something that I've actually talked to a lot of my friends recently about is my parents' generation, religion was very split between party lines. For example, a lot of times the Republicans are the Christians and the Democrats are not. And I've been noticing recently that is, especially with my generation, not the case at all. You know, you have a wide range of people from all religions on both sides, and it's not, the reason you're voting is not dependent on one specific issue. It's a whole range of issues, and so you can't always make that decision based solely on your beliefs. Your particular faith beliefs.
Thanks very much. I want to throw out this notion that I think has served as kind of the conventional wisdom for many years now, that young people on the whole just aren't that into politics. You know, that people need to get older, experience the world a little bit before they get engaged. Do you think that's changing? Are we experiencing something significant here in terms of young people caring more or less? Sure, right here.
Hi, I'm Marcella from St. Paul. And for me, in my case, I think when I was 18, 19, it was the first time I was able to vote, and that was in George Bush's first, when he was first elected. And I remember being excited that I actually could vote in the presidential election and going to bed and feeling like, oh, good, I'm excited I voted because I didn't vote for Bush, and waking up the next day and feeling like really disillusioned. And then getting excited again when I voted for Kerry and when I thought things were going to change and the disillusionment coming again. And so for me, for the last 8 years, I've been more increasingly disillusioned because I felt like the leader who was leading the country that I can vote in wasn't doing things that I believed in. And now I feel like maybe the hope's coming back, and I still don't know who I'm going to vote for. But for me, that's what it's been about. And so I do think that the reason why people, youth in this country, are getting excited is because there is a possibility that things can change.
But it's been hard to feel that sea change the
exactly.
last few years.
Yeah, in
somebody
our
who's democratically inclined.
Right. And in my lifetime as a voter, you know, these basically things have gone down in terms of, you know, the job possibilities available for people our age and all kinds of things, people going to war and dying. So these are pretty dark things to see when you're, you know, 20-something figuring out the world.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Anthony from St. Paul. And I think something that we haven't talked about a lot yet is that young people in general like to think that we're cool. We like to think that we're always on the edge of change and that we have a unique perspective on everything. And I don't know if that's really ever been different for young people. It's always the same. And at this point in politics, especially on the Democratic side, we see something that we haven't seen before. We see a change. We see candidates that look different, whether it's race or gender, than they ever have before, ever in the entire history of this country. And I think young people are responding to that.
Something very different on the stage, as it were.
Absolutely, absolutely. When you see the same type of people, and whether it's what you see or just the same rhetoric and the same type of politics over and over again, I think young people are somewhat inspired by what they're seeing at the highest level of government right now.
Thanks very much. That's a nice point to end our conversation on. How about a round of applause for all of you and everybody who spoke up? You know, the reason we got everybody here together tonight is, once again, Super Tuesday is coming up next week. 24 states have a caucus or a primary for at least one party on that day. The superest Super Tuesday ever. A lot of news organizations are developing their own theme music for the elections right now. So, with the big day right around the corner, here's our contribution to the music of the season. Super Tuesday, you're the one. We'll thin the field when you are done. Super Tuesday, there's so much that rides on you. Super Tuesday, nobody compares. Some other states still vote, but no one really cares. Super Tuesday, you're the biggest by far, that's true. Super duper, or maybe even tsunami. Winners cruise and the losers cry for their mommy. Like Giuliani. Oh, Super Tuesday, such a crucial day. The first convention still 8 months away. In the meantime, just what are we supposed to do? Super Tuesday, you're the one. February's never been this fun. Oh, Super Tuesday, there's so much that rides on. All these candidates are staking their prides on. Super Tuesday, there's so much that rides on you. Thanks. Thank you to Jimmy Kennedy of the Smarts for helping us out on piano tonight. You can learn more about In the Loop, including listen to all the shows from our recently completed season at minnesotapublicradio.org/in-the-loop. Many of the voices you heard tonight are people in our Public Insight Network, and that network is growing all the time. You can sign up by visiting that website. This election special was produced by myself with Sandon Totten and Molly Bloom. Got help tonight from Julie Seipel and Larissa Anderson. Should give some credit to a website that's been very helpful with statistics on young people's participation in politics, civicyouth.org. Check it out. Our technical director is Josh Kubasta with engineer Cameron Wiley. Thanks to Curtis Gilbert for a great story. Thanks to this very thoughtful audience here at Minnesota Public Radio. Our executive producer is Michael Scholar. I'm Jeff Horwich. Thanks for listening, and keep an ear out for what's coming up next from In the Loop.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a solar sensing climate control system. Learn more at Acura.com.